time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. This is the RT Soccer Podcast. I'm Adrian Eames and James O'Toole from Soccer Republic is here as well. Soccer Republic, eh? Who remembers Soccer Republic? We run that program, Soccer Republic, used to show goals from the SSC Electricity League. Remember the SSC Electricity League? James, it's coming back, isn't it? Early August.
Crossed, it's coming back. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed, Adrian. I don't remember it now, to tell you the truth. I've been stuck on Women's National League, FAI Cup Finals and stuff like that since, and UEFA Films since March. So I kind of forget what League of Ireland football looks like now at this stage.
But we have a date, the 31st of July, for the resumption of football. Praise be Allah. Thought we'd never get there.
Yeah, I thought we'd never get there, and hopefully we do get there, because just pray to God, pray to Allah, or God, whoever you pray to, that we do see a football kicked on that Friday night, 31st of July.
You're quite circumspect, and I can understand why, because you just don't know what's around the corner in this crazy world we now live in. But we have to live in hope that we're the right side of the pandemic, and hopefully the figures continue to drop and drop and drop, and hopefully soon there'll be a vaccine found. But anyway, we have to operate on the here and now, and on the here and now, football is due to resume on the 31st of July. We'll be chatting to Neil Fenn, the Cork City manager, presently about the resumption of the league. Also, the Women's National League due to get underway in early August. We'll check in with Catherine Cronin of DLR Ways. We'll also be speaking to the Bray Wanderers chairman, Niall O'Driscoll, about their fundraising efforts, and with clubs possibly eyeing up the potential to generate money from behind closed doors football, we examine what's involved in streaming sport. Well, it was a pretty drawn out affair, but as I mentioned, we have a return date, the 31st of July. The issues around funding were relatively quickly resolved, but the format turned into a significant stumbling block. Eventually, the vote went with an 18-match campaign, relegation promotion as originally planned, with the bottom club relegated, First Division champions promoted, and playoffs to follow, involving the ninth place team from the Premier Division. And as you mentioned, the Cork City manager, Neil Fenn, is with us, I'm delighted to say. Neil, first of all, how do you feel about the format, given that 9 of the 10 Premier Division teams seem to be of one mind, which was basically one team promoted from the first and one relegated from the Premier Division? How do you feel about it now?
Well, first of all, hi Adrian, hi James. It's good to be back. It's been a long while, and I'm glad that we can be back on the phone talking about football again. But how do I feel about it? I feel that, you know, we have to get on with it. It was a long, drawn-out process. It took too long before we finally got a date. And to go round in circles and end up where we were at the start is frustrating. But we know what it is now, and we're just getting on with it and looking forward to the season.
So your attitude is, it is how it is now, we just need to move on?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're disappointed with the way it was all constructed and what happened and why it took so long. We found ourselves back where we started. We could have been planned a lot earlier to be back on the 31st of July. So, but we are what we are now. We know we finally got a date, which is what we wanted in the first place. So we know how many games we're going to play. So we're fully focused on that now.
And Neil, we're obviously all very immersed in League of Ireland football and football in general. Everybody on this podcast would be. But from an outside perspective, looking at the League of Ireland and all that went on in recent weeks, it didn't really reflect very well, did it?
No, I think that, you know, this is a culmination of years of neglect. I've finally come back to bite the league, really. And at the start, and I don't blame the people in charge now, really, because they've been kind of thrown in at the deep end with this. No one saw this pandemic happening, obviously, in the first place, but then with what's gone on the FAI before, and we're trying to find solutions, and they're putting it out to the clubs to try and sort it out amongst themselves, which was never really going to happen. Each club's going to look after the best interests of their own club, and you get a majority in the end, and they go against the majority in the end. So I think that, you know, we are where we are now, but the most important thing is that we know what games we've got. Football's back. And that's what we're focused on now.
And being where you are, Neil, you're in ninth place, 3 points. How's your squad looking to get back into football? Have you still got the same players? Have players who were unknown come back to you? Or is that still all up in the air?
Well, you know, you kind of have a different focus from having a 36-game league to having an 18-game league. We went young this year. We had a young squad that we felt would improve the more games we played, and I felt that's what happened. We had an extremely difficult start. The random matches we had to start with were difficult for us. And we felt that with more games, we would get better. Now, with 13 games left, like you say, ninth place, is our focus got to change a little bit on trying to stay in the division? And is our squad prepared for that? So we have to look at that. In terms of the players coming back from the UK, they're finally coming back because we didn't have a date. So when you're trying to get club players back from UK clubs on loan, they won't send you the players over until you have a start date. So we finally got a start date. Then the players have got a quarantine for 2 weeks. So we'll be entering our first game of the season with players that haven't trained long with us and playing teams that have been back. Our first game was against Bowes. They've known when their start date or when they were allowed to resume training. So that's frustrating, but you know, there's nothing we can do about it. We just have to get on with it and work hard and make sure we're ready for the first game of the season.
Yeah, that must be very frustrating for you as manager. Given that and given those circumstances, will you be looking to make other signings?
Yeah, we have to reassess our squad. Like I said, we can't go into the start of the season or the rest of the games with the attitude we had last time, which was we will get better as the season goes on. We can't afford to only win one game in five of these next 13 games. So it's important we hit the ground running, whether that means trying to bring a little bit more experience into the squad. I think we'd be looking at that if we can. That's not as easy said than done, but we'll be looking to try and a little bit more experience just so that we are prepared for the first few round of games that we don't slip behind.
Looking at football matches, Neil, as I'm sure you have in Germany and Italy and obviously in England as well, matches behind closed doors, the dynamics of that, playing football, let's say at Turner's Cross, without the shed roaring you on, it almost cancels out home advantage, doesn't it?
Yeah, so they say. I think they come out with the stats the other day that the home advantage seems to be null and void. So that's disappointing for us because seven of our remaining games are at home. So again, we just have to, you know, all you can do is try and play at a tempo and try and recreate some sort of atmosphere and some sort of tempo that you would play at if you're playing at home. But like you say, it does kind of rule it out. And, you know, it's just, you know, there's no better place to play than the Turner's Cross when it's packed. Especially, you know, it's a little bit intimidating for teams to visit here. But, you know, again, there's you know, it's safety. Safety comes first. And if fans are not allowed in the ground, then fans are not allowed in the ground.
I suppose from your point of view as well, like when you look at where you are in the table, you're still only 3 points off of fourth place. So that will get some kind of atmosphere into the squad anyway and a belief into the squad for these last 13 games for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's very early to look at tables. I know these games are back in March, but it's very early to look at tables after five games. Some teams have played four. So you truly get a feel for a table after 10 games, I would say, in a 36 game season. So yeah, obviously no one's the top two are pulling away, but everyone else is in and around us. So you know, we just have to focus on ourselves, really, not be looking at tables, just try and get as many wins as we can out of the 13 remaining games. And like I said, we had a difficult start. That's not saying that there's easy games in this league, but you know, we've been away to Dundalk, been away to Shells, which are very difficult games. So at least we haven't got to go back to those two grounds.
And Neil, in terms of Turner's Cross as a venue, it's one of the finest venues in the country, of course, but is there much work required at Turner's Cross to get it compliant with all the guidelines, the HSE health and safety guidelines?
Yeah, there's, you know, that's another issue with the clubs, with the strain on the clubs, with all the PPE and making sure that they're compliant with all those regulations. So yeah, it's we're lucky at Turner's Cross. It's quite the change rooms are quite big and quite spaced out, and there's room, so we're not too bad there. It's it'll be ready for our first game.
And then travelling to away games, the logistics of all of that. I mean, there was moved before, possibly clubs might need two buses. What's the latest view on that?
We're just, like I say, the rules and regulations change on a weekly basis, so we just keep up to date with that, and we just go ahead with whatever the recommendations are. There was at one stage it was no buses and everyone should drive to games themselves. So whatever the regulations are, you know, we just have to, like I said, we're just focused on getting back. We're just happy to be back. I think everybody's accepted now the league's going to be the way it is. We've got our mind on that now. So anything we're prepared for any eventualities, really. We're just looking forward to getting back playing and excited for it.
And what's your thoughts on fans perhaps being permitted to games, because everybody is wondering, you know, it's obviously limited in terms of numbers. Do you think there'll be a blanket ban on fans being allowed from the get-go, or would there be a limited number perhaps of fans allowed to go?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think, you know, the regulations that the government come out with gatherings, outdoor gatherings, is there, but it's whether the league decides that that fans can get safely in and out. The most important thing is that we don't have a second wave, and we don't have spikes around football. So that's the most important thing. If clubs could do it and can prove they can do it safely, then hopefully fans will be allowed back in. But until that stage, until we get the go-ahead and every club's comfortable with fans going and fans being comfortable going into grounds as well, until, you know, that's all done, then we're just planning at the moment to play without fans. But hopefully, you know, like you've seen in the Premier League and in the Bundesliga, the games are not the same without supporters there. So hopefully that fans can come back in and we can have full houses soon.
And Neil, we're going to be talking about streaming of matches from behind closed doors. Is that something Cork City perhaps are looking at?
Yeah, again, it's the FA. I know they did have ideas to stream matches and then it went a little bit cold. But as far as I'm aware, there will be streaming for matches and people will be able to watch the games, and which is a good thing as well. You know, it's they were saying it before about some of the grounds not being equipped for it, but hopefully the grounds have got up to scratch in terms of the Wi-Fi and the camera angles, and we can put a good product out there.
It must be a very, very busy time for you.
Yeah, well, it seems like the season only just got going, and it seems like we're doing it all over again, arranging pre-season matches, getting players in, getting loan players. It seems like we're doing it all again. It's a weird situation. We're only a few games in, and we're doing it all over again. But, you know, like I said to you, I've had enough time at home now, and we're back now out on the training pitch, and that's the most important thing. You really do miss it. We really do miss those matches and match days, the theme of match days, and I'm sure everybody does. So if this is only a small price to pay doing all this again, it's just looking forward to the match days again and getting out there and managing this club.
So Neil, when you're talking about back to your pre-season, what's your go-to for a first day of pre-season again for the lads to make sure they're up to scratch?
Well, normally, you know, we give them a good price. It's not like my day where as soon as the season finished, that was it. You sat around, you went on holiday, you didn't do a lot. These boys now, they look after themselves, so they've all got programs. They're a lot more educated around the nutrition and around the strength and conditioning kind of side of it. So they're given programs, they train hard. And this was a little bit different this year because normally during the off season, players would be playing five-a-sides or whatever with their friends and could have a kick around. But this time they couldn't. They couldn't even go outside or meet up with people. So the first week was really, really like just getting used to kicking the ball again and different football movements. And then we've just built it up slowly. So they've been back 2 weeks. This is the third week now, starting building it up now and a little bit more physical this week.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck, Neil.
All right, cheers, lad.
The new season, so to speak, for the resumption of the league. It's going to be a very hectic time between now and the 31st of July. But thanks for taking the time out to join us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. Thanks, Neil. That's Neil Fenn, the Cork City manager. James, there's been talk in the last few days about possibly a friendly between Paris Saint-Germain and Shamrock Rovers, with Shamrock Rovers travelling to the French capital. But you've got some fresh information. You've got your finger on the pulse as the goings on, and that may not be the case. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, it may not be the case. It was obviously reported last night by BN Sport. This is where it came down, as they had reported that they were going to show the match at 7 o'clock kickoff on the 17th of July. But obviously, it's a great thing for Shamrock Rovers to be asked to go and play against Paris Saint-Germain. As a Derry City fan, I'll put that in again. Being in the Parc des Princes to watch Derry play PSG was one of my favourite moments of my life, bar obviously children and wedding. Better put that in.
Never knew that. You've never mentioned it.
Yeah, I never mentioned it. But great, great opportunity for them. But it does look like the government travel will stop them moving and going over there, because it looks like this won't come about until the 20th of July, 3 days after the game. And then, of course, there is the current situation where you need to self-isolate for 14 days on return, which would have meant that if they did play on the 17th, you would have to think it would be the 18th by the time they come home. 2 weeks would mean that it would be after the 31st of July, which means they wouldn't make the first day of the season before the players were able to come out of self-isolation. Now, I do understand that the to great expense to themselves. Shamrock Rovers were willing to have all the players tested on return, so that may not be a case. But in fairness to them, I think they're looking at it from a place. It wouldn't be fair of them to go over. It's great for them to be asked to go over, but it wouldn't be fair of them to go over if government guidelines are against it at the moment. So I can't actually see, I'd almost 100% at this stage say that a friendly won't be going ahead.
Okay, all right. That's James O'Toole with the latest from that discussed Shamrock Rovers Paris Saint-Germain friendly in Paris. Now let's get a first division perspective. We heard there from Neil Fenn, the Cork City manager. A lot of clubs, of course, in the process of raising funds to get their grounds up to scratch to comply with all the health and safety protocols that are absolutely necessary for the return of football. Delighted to say we're joined on the line by the chairman of Bray Wanderers, Niall O'Driscoll. Niall, we'll come on to your fundraising drive in just a moment, but can I ask you first of all, from a Bray Wanderers perspective, how pleased are you that last week's vote went in favour of retaining the playoffs?
First of all, delighted to be back playing football. That's the most important thing, you know. How that ended up happening, to me, doesn't really matter, you know. You had a group of clubs, they all have views, whether it's first or premier, it doesn't really matter. I think the big thing was to get back playing football, you know what I mean? I know there was a lot made of sort of who voted and who did that, or who didn't. I think the whole key is, let's just get back, you know, assuming it's safe to do so, and at least now we know where we are, and off we can go and plan, because it will be a challenge. There's no doubt about it, everybody.
Yeah, and we'll come on to the challenges in just a moment. But can you understand the perspective of clubs near the foot of the Premier Division having invested and, you know, budgeted for a 36-game season, and all of a sudden they have to reevaluate and now focus on an 18-match season with just maybe 13, 14 games to go? You know, no fans coming into games, the loss of revenue and the possibility now of relegation. You can see why they took the stance they did.
Yeah, no, sorry. I think everyone's opinion has to be respected in this, you know. I think you know, from schoolboy clubs right down to National League clubs, whether they're in Premier or First, have all the same challenges and issues that everybody have. The scale is obviously somewhat different, you know what I mean? Certainly, like in the Premier League, obviously the wages is probably the biggest single difference and pressure that the owners of those clubs have, as compared maybe to the First Division to a lesser extent. But at the same time, you know, they've had benefits of COVID assistance and wages where the First Division probably haven't. So there is a lot of pros and cons, you know what I mean, that are unique to every football club. I actually think the amateur game is going to find it even more difficult, to be honest with you, rather than the professional leagues. I think at the end of the day, we're in a position that, to be honest, nobody's ever been in before, you know. So I think, you know, I'd probably give the FAI a bit of credit, even though they've got a bit of bashing probably of some of the stuff. I give them credit for their enthusiasm and effort in trying to get it there. They were the first national association to try and get their players and their sport back and running. And it was interesting listening to Neil there earlier. This changes every week at the moment, you know what I mean? So you know, from training session to training session, it's either relaxed, it's more stringent. I heard you talk about spectators there. That'll be a challenge for every club, depending on, you know, the accessibility of clubs and the facilities they have, you know, will present a unique challenge to every one of the 20 clubs. So I think everyone is going through the same, but I hear what you're saying. Obviously the risks are greater and the costs are bigger. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, the contribution all these clubs make, both Premier and First Division, to communities and society is probably equal. I suppose the biggest lesson for me on COVID is probably has it forced us all to reevaluate what's important in life.
I was just struck by something you said there, Niall. You mentioned that it might be more difficult for amateur clubs as opposed to professional clubs. Why do you say that?
Well, I think the costs, and like, you must remember, there's a lot of the amateur clubs, and particularly the underage side, who have as much exposure to financial commitments as many of the National League clubs. And yet they don't enjoy the same opportunity of revenue that many of the National League clubs do. I'm involved in the schoolboy club myself, you know, 50, 60 teams. You know, they have cost 30,000, 40,000, you know, a month to run this club. There's no revenue, there's no membership, there's no coffee shops, there's no lottos. So, you know, they have as much challenge. And I think that'll be a big challenge for the government, just getting, we call it volunteer sport back. Because we all know the benefits it gives for everybody, you know.
Yeah, and that's going to be massive. As you said, the amateur sport, like the likes of the club that you're involved in, if even at the moment, if you make any finances out of your clubhouse or anything like that, that's completely quashed. So you're relying on people, the goodness of people, to go into their own pockets to help out clubs like, for instance, St Joseph's or around the local area as well, Cabinteely and stuff like that, to help them out. And the GoFundMe pages are massive for you guys at the moment.
Yeah, and it's funny. We launched it just to sort of say, here, we need help. You know, I saw somebody criticise us there and said that wasn't very good and Sligo's was brilliant. You know, and I just sort of said, well, you know, in fairness to Sligo, 1,300-1,400 people contributed. We've got close on 100 from where Bray's come from in the year or two I've been involved. You know, we 200 people at a game and we now over 1,300 at a game. So Bray are very much in a rebuilding mode again. And you know, for 100 people to hand their pockets and give us a dig out, whether it's 2 grand, 5 grand, 7 grand, it makes a massive difference. And I think if every club picks up another 5 or 10 grand through a GoFundMe or run on a app or a lotto, it makes a huge difference. But we are asking people who have been devastated to contribute. And you know, credit where credit's due for anybody who contributes, you know what I mean?
Like, and only, I presume people can access the information on the Bray Wanderers website or just go to the GoFundMe website and key in Bray Wanderers and they'll get all the information there, would they?
Absolutely. Just all our social media channels have the link. It's quite simple. Click, contribute a few bob, whether it's a fiver or 5,000, it doesn't matter. We take any penny that comes our way. It just takes the pressure off between now and the end of the season. Because the challenge is, I think, for all the clubs at the moment, is if we can get to the end of the season and it hasn't hurt the clubs in terms of their long-term sustainability, that's a huge achievement from where we come from.
Yeah. And is there much work required at the Carlisle grounds to get it up to scratch for health and safety?
Yeah, in fairness, we're lucky with the Carlisle grounds as far as it's a nice, tidy little ground with plenty of space. So we don't have the same challenge as some of the other grounds have. But yes, it has to be fit for purpose. It has to be suitable if spectators are allowed. Certainly, we have to make sure that the players and the coaching staff and the volunteers are looked after first. And we've done all the things we're supposed to do from the HSD perspective and, in fairness, the FAI's perspective. And we just do what we have to do. But there are costs. We did a quick cost each game. Could cost us 2,000 to 3,000, you know, just to have it ready, have it cleaned, all of it in pieces. You know, but we'll get there. And I think it's changing all the time. I'd like to think we will see fans in. I think we might see it at different levels. You know, when we start back, it might be 200 or 300. A month after that, it might be 500. And after that, it might be a little bit wider. You know, and just managing that and the challenges that come into it will be the same for all of us. But no, I'd be happy enough in Bray. We're well geared. We're lucky. I heard Neil Fenn say about we're lucky with big dressing rooms. We're lucky with plenty of spaces. We're lucky, you know, not every club is in that position. So that will be a challenge for some clubs, you know.
Okay, so you're optimistic that some fans, a limited number perhaps, will be allowed in from the outset, from the resumption?
Yeah, I would think so. Now, obviously, you know, the safety of people is the most important thing. So, you know, if we do get our second waves, our the socialising down Dublin doesn't hurt us all, you know what I mean, that we saw over the weekend, you know. And I think, you know, I think it's just how we'll all behave will dictate that. I think the government, like everyone's the same, have done an excellent job. I know they're getting criticised for the speed they come back. But like I keep saying it to all the players, you know, owners have huge responsibilities at football clubs. There are almost 2,000 people have lost their lives. So the priority is somewhat different.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck with the ongoing fundraising efforts. It's a tough time for everybody involved in football in terms of getting grounds and venues up to scratch and even signing players. Will you be looking at perhaps signing players or new players, or where is Gary Cronin at in that regard?
Well, I suppose Gary would love to say to you, yeah, he'd love loads of new players, and I'm sitting here managing the budget, sort of being realistic with the scenario. So time will tell on that one. You know what I mean? I think the priority for clubs is to get back, be sustainable and use this time wisely. You know what I mean? Like, to me, the other side of it is the underage in the National League clubs. You know, there's another 100 kids in every club who've been training since God loved them in February and haven't kicked a ball. And you know, all the clubs have these kids and parents and everybody just as much as the first teams. And I think that's the biggest challenge for the next 2 weeks. Can we get this group back in some form? You know what I mean?
And now we've been talking about streaming of matches. I asked Neil Fenn a little earlier about possibly Cork City investigating the streaming of matches. Is that something Bray Wanderers might be considering at the moment?
It is, and we're sort of a little bit lucky in Bray insofar as we have the infrastructure in place, because obviously Bray were the Premier a year or two ago, so we sort of have the infrastructure in place that can probably happen. Not every First Division club is in that position, so it is something we're actively been talking to the FAI about, saying, you know, it doesn't have to just be the top 10 clubs, if clubs want to step in. And they've been very open on that, in fairness to them. You know, they've been very open on that, so we'll just see how that one evolves.
So you think that could well happen for Bray Wanderers? Would the club have to do it themselves under the auspices of the FAI, or would it be largely overseen by the FAI, with them maybe suggesting budgets or particular companies, or what way do you think it might work?
I think my understanding is that is being overseen by the FAI more as a pilot, probably for this period, more with another eye on the long-term structure of streaming. So I do think there'll be a bit of compromise on that one, but no doubt there will be. So I think it's a matter of using this time to do a lot of strategic planning for all intents and purposes, using the situation we're in, you know.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck with the fundraising and all that goes with it, and all the preparations for the resumption of football. Many thanks for joining us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. That's Niall O'Driscoll, the chairman of Bray Wanderers. Well, we've been talking about streaming of matches. James, you're more of a TV guy. That's your background. Streaming of matches potential?
Great potential for us, absolutely brilliant potential for us. As we've seen in the last year or so from our Friday night football, our live football on Friday nights, we've been streaming footage back to ourselves from grounds around the country in full HD. So the units are there, the boxes are there to do that in full HD back to ourselves through satellite. So the infrastructure's there in the Premier Division grounds. I will emphasise it is the Premier Division grounds this is in. So the potential is there, the infrastructure's there. It's just whether there's a willingness to go out and do it now. That's the only thing I would look at.
Okay, well, let's get a view from Brendan Dowd, who's MD of Dowd Media, a fledgling company based in Westport in Mayo, primarily involved in the GAA market, it must be said. Look after Mayo GAA TV, which has proven to be very, very popular. They've streamed lots of club matches in Mayo, also involved with Clare GAA. It's not just sports streaming they do. They do all kinds of streaming, but we're focusing on sport at the moment. And Brendan joins us on the line. Brendan, from a League of Ireland perspective, the key, let's just take it that the key infrastructure that James referred to is in place. There's Wi-Fi, camera positions, power, broadband in many venues. How difficult and, I suppose, ultimately, how expensive is it to stream sport and, in this case, football matches?
Well, I'd say relatively easy. I mean, the technology is quite straightforward. As you said, if the infrastructure is there, you know, it's one thing to have the broadband facility. Obviously, a vantage point from a camera is important. We normally like to shoot into a stand. It's not completely essential, as opposed to being in the stand. The only reason, there's two reasons, that if you're in a stand and there's a crowd in the stand and you're not elevated enough, and secondly, if you have columns in the way, that can be a bit restrictive. But yeah, once you get a camera position, you can stream from it. So really, I suppose the basic that you'd need is at least two cameras. We normally say at least two cameras, and then some sort of an ability to bring the sound into it. So really, that's what we do is have at least a four crew shoot with at least one cameraman on each camera, one wide, one close, and then we bring the sound into it. In answer to your question, how much is it? I guess it just depends to what extent you want to go with this. You know, if it's I think I mentioned to you when we spoke before, if you have a paying audience, they do expect something for their money, and I guess it's a question of how much they're paying and what they're expecting. You know, if it's just the game, the capture of the game with a commentator and half-time, you know, that is quite simple. You know, you're talking a thousand or thousands, certainly not tens of thousands, to get a reasonable production out there. You know, as I said, if you're paying for it, you know, you're selling the sport. People want to hear analysis. They want interviews with people. You know, they want pitch side interviews. They want to feel part of it. You know, you're now starting to compete with other sports that are doing the same. So, you know, I think you kind of have to set your standard and say, well, it's a minimum two-camera shoot. Yes, we'll have a commentator. Yes, we'll have a presenter. We will do pitch-side interviews, yes or no. Once you define those things, whilst it will cost more, you know, if people are paying for it, then it's possibly a route you need to go down.
James, what are your thoughts on what Brendan just mentioned there? Because he's quite right. People do expect a quality now. They're so used to, be it, you know, the RT coverage or the Air Sport coverage of matches or Sky Sports. It's never going to be like that in terms of production values, perhaps. But they still, nonetheless, expect bang for their buck, don't they? If they're paying for a service.
Yeah, they do expect it. Now, the one thing I will say is that I don't know how our game's going to be put to television over the next couple of weeks. As we said, as Neil mentioned earlier, you've got about 13 weeks of football plus FEI Cup at the end of that. So I don't know how many live games are actually going to happen. If there's one a week, for instance, that has a full production on it, and then the rest of them are just fed in as part of that, or are on their own with simple two cameras, that way all you're needing then is a commentator. You're not going to go for full production. You're not going to go for a host at that, because the main game is going to have all that in it anyway. I think it's quite possible. As mentioned there, all you really need is your two cameras in proper positions, linked up, a small mixing desk with audio, and you can give the people what they expect to see with that. But again, it depends on what you're charging, and it has to complement what's happening if there's a live game that weekend that's being filmed by 8 different cameras as well. So it can't be different levels of how good the production is. Both of them need to be produced just as well.
And of course, the FEI are the rights holders, so it's important to acknowledge that in this conversation. But Brendan, just going back to the technicalities of what's involved, in terms of streaming, say, then from the ground, in most cases then, are fans logging on to them, maybe the club's website, and having signed up, they hit on a link, or is it on YouTube, or what way does it tend to operate?
Well, I mentioned pay-per-view, so I mean, there's really two options. There's pay-per-view or free-to-air. So it's free-to-air, you go to something like YouTube or Facebook Live, and that will, you know, generate an audience, you know, to an extent. I mean, I think a lot of people perhaps think, well, if I stream this, lots of people will pay to watch it. Well, they won't pay to watch it if they don't know it's there and they don't know where to look for it. And secondly, they probably won't pay to watch it if they don't know the quality of what they're getting. So, like we've suggested, a lot of the GAA clubs are looking at streaming club games now because, you know, the county isn't kicking until later. So there could be demand for that. But, you know, who really is going to want to watch the first round of maybe even the senior club championship in say Mayo, for argument's sake? But maybe if they've seen the first match, they might well be enticed to watch the next round or the next round, you know. So I think there's definitely an element where you need to sell it, unless you feel, you know, I suppose the other scenario is, you know, if 500 people are locked out or 5,000 people would have come to it and weren't going to go there, well, you have a captive audience there, so it might be slightly different. So, so it just depends whether you're going to go free-to-air or whether you're going to go pay-per-view. You know, I guess you need to establish the brand if you're going to go pay-per-view. That's really it. But if people aren't allowed to watch it, if they're not going to get into the ground, then I think anything is better than nothing to an extent. And I'd often, you know, very often say that a decent streamed show is going to be quite a lot more preferable to something of just commentary alone, and people would probably be prepared to watch that. And I mean, as far as costs for pay-per-view, as far as, you know, the ticket price as such, that can be set, you know, that can be set to anything. And I think I also mentioned to you, you know, would it be something near the gate price or would it be less than the gate price? I mean, you know, €5 for a game probably is an amount that's achievable, quite straightforward. You know, we found that in some of the championship matches that we've done, and we know that Tyrone done, they were getting something like 4,000, 5,000 views at €5 a head. So it was a worthwhile, you know, exercise. You know, so yeah, it's achievable on both of the fronts. But yeah, as far as the platforms are concerned, one thing I will say is that a lot of the streaming platforms, the Facebooks and the YouTubes, are set up for as an audience generator. They want numbers. They want numbers. They're not really interested in paying. There's only a few platform providers that will have a payment wall. So that's sort of that's quite new technology. You know, that's quite different. You know, to go through that. But it's all doable. Yeah.
Yeah, I think as we're talking there about how do you get people to pay, I think if we look towards the NFL in America, with their Game Pass and their app for their Game Pass, and then if we even bring it closer to home, if you look at GAA Go, that app for streaming games as well, I think infrastructure for this kind of thing has been built before, so it shouldn't be that hard to repurpose for League of Ireland.
You know, there's, I guess there's thinking, it's looking at more options, but I mean, so such thing as season tickets. If you said, well, we're going to stream, you know, the first, the second, the third round, or the fourth round, so many matches, then you can offer a ticket price. It might be a €5 a match, but 20 for the season. You know, then you've at least got a guaranteed audience. So any of those options work. You know, you can do that. You can, you know, you can sell a number of them. That's all achievable. Yeah.
It sounds like there's great potential there, and it, you know, I'm not saying it's cheap. I mean, it's certainly not cheap, but it's not as expensive perhaps to mount as I perhaps would have thought. Am I right?
Yeah,
Brendan.
Well, it's not that expensive. But one thing that I just wanted to pick up, I mean, as was just mentioned, you know, it's never like Sky. And I guess, like, the reality is we don't expect to be like Sky. We're not a 20-camera shoot, you know. We're not doing action. We are doing action replays. We're doing the critical stuff, the replays. But one thing that you look at is, I mean, if you looked at something like the Saturday shows, you know, that Archie were putting out, Ryan Tuberty, a lot of that stuff was just a Zoom interview with people, right?
Sure.
We can do that as well. A lot of the technology that they're using, we can use. We did a 3-hour live show in Castlebar, and we actually had a presenter in Castlebar, we had a presenter in Dublin, and we went to Australia, to America, to New Zealand, to Kuala Lumpur, to about 15 different destinations, the UK, to Dublin, all live. So we can do that sort of thing, you know. So you can actually make your show quite interesting in that you could actually have commentary or input from different people. In fact, you know, you could well have a match on and you could have another commentator, another match. So it's you know... whilst, you know, we're not set ourselves out to have the level of equipment that Sky have or RTE have, but we can still do very similar things and get, you know, I always say that, I mean, you know, we're not putting that much more in and we're getting, you know, a better production than a radio. You know, you've got the commentary and the vision.
Sounds like a good business. Potentially it could be a good business to be in. Are you in the market for League of Ireland matches, Brendan?
We're in the market for anything. We were approached by Rugby League as well, and I didn't realise there was Rugby League in Ireland, you know, and there is. And the reason why it's not known about it is because it's not publicised. And I think the situation is, you know, each sport has to stand on its own two feet, and it's not just about making money. Obviously, this has to make money or be viable, but it's about promoting the sport, you know, and... you know, and I think we're at a crossroads here, a turning point. You know, there's a lot of TV deals, done exclusivity TV deals. They're going to get blown out of the water with streaming. You know, because everybody, you know, if one has an exclusive deal in one sport, the other sport will say, well, I'll take that patch. You know, so It's about customer choice to me. You know, at the moment, what seems to be happening with the mainstream TVs is we're given we have to take what's given to us. Whereas if there's choice out there of all different sports, if they don't keep with the pack, they'll be lost. I mean, that's how I honestly see it. You know, I thought it'd move a lot quicker than it did, but I think this COVID will make it move a lot quicker. And people, you know, are now saying, well, my fans can't get in. They want to see it. Who's going to stop them seeing it? You know, the technology is there.
James, what's your TV hat? Is this the way of the future?
I think there'll always be a mix of media happening for sport, especially with sport. There'll be a mix of online stuff, there'll be a mix of live television, free to air, there'll be a mix of live television, pay-per-view, the likes of Sky, BT and stuff like that. You're right, the figures we're seeing for live football from the likes of BT and Sky to gather exclusive rights, I think it's hit a ceiling that's going to crash quite quickly now. I don't think we'll see them type of figures being paid by anybody in the future. I think rights-wise, I think we'll see a lot of shared rights between companies, the likes of RTE and Air Sport and stuff like that will go joint on rights, or RTE and Virgin will go joint on rights. That's the way small countries are going to get rights into the country so people can see events. Streaming, I think, is, as has been pointed out, I think streaming has had a possibility for the last 4 years. Hasn't caught on as much as it should, because anything we've seen streamed has actually been quite poor. But the technology is there, and I think it's going to ramp up now. And I think, yes, there's definitely a future for it, particularly in small markets like Ireland. I think there's definitely a market for it.
Final word, Brendan?
Well, yeah, he's right. The Fitzgibbon Cup and the Sigerson Cup were all streamed live, incidentally. Most of the rounds were streamed. But as it so happens, the final, from what I understood, was actually sent out on TG Cahir live. So it seems, you know, they want the cake at the end for the big stuff. But I actually think that, you know, even club championship stuff could get, you know, club championships, Gaelic football or any of the lower leagues, if they stay committed and follow it through, could generate an interest, you know, all the way up. So, yeah, you know, and people might think, well, I'd say that anyway, but I do, you know. I often look at, you know, in America, I have an uncle in America, and he watches American football. I says, well, why don't you watch the Gaelic football? And he says, well, because I can't get it. I mean, it's as simple as that. They can't. Whereas if it's streamed, they can. And, you know, he might well be just as interested in watching his local club playing in America than he would in, rather than watching an American football game. I mean, that's really the point, is that if it's available, I believe people will watch it. If it's marketing and it's available, people will watch it.
Okay, interesting times ahead. Brendan Dowd, MD of Dowd Media, thanks very much for your insights. It really is a very interesting world that could be opening up, given all that's going on. Now, back in, I think around about March, we spoke to Catherine Cronin of DLR Waves, who works as a nurse in St. Vincent's Hospital, and she was talking about her day job then and also about her football life. And I'm delighted to say Catherine is with us once again. Catherine, how have you been for the last couple of months?
Hiya. Yeah, all good. Busy enough. But yeah, all is good.
And of course, as has been said by so many people, Ireland as a nation owes so much to those working on the front line, the likes of yourselves. How difficult has it been for you?
It was okay. Obviously, we're still not out of the woods or anything yet. But, sure. You know, everyone kind of worked together well as a team. And I think, you know, we've done really well. Obviously, the busyness in the hospital did rise there for a few weeks. But, you know, thankfully, the numbers are looking good at the moment. But, yeah, as I said, just see how it goes now over the next few weeks. But, yeah, it was OK. Bit busy, but kept going.
Did you get much time to even think about football at all?
Yeah, as I we're kind of saying, we had a busy enough schedule trying to keep up with over the last few weeks, you know, to try and keep us fit and keep us on the right track. So I was able to, you know, tip away and do my own bit, but it's much better now being back with all the girls, and kind of getting that team atmosphere going again.
Okay, well, let's talk football. The women's season, as we know, will start now on the second weekend in August. How excited are you about the season finally getting underway? Because as we know, it was due to start in March, but because of the COVID-19 pandemic, it was put on hold. But finally, we have a return date. Are you looking forward to it? And are you back training?
Yeah, we're back training since last week. So definitely very excited to get going. We're kind of joking, saying it's been the longest pre-season I've ever had. But yeah, we're all really looking forward to getting back. Obviously, just kind of following the guidelines from the FAI, the safe return to play protocol. So, you know, things are a little bit different. You know, training and checking temperatures and, you know, obviously trying to follow the hand hygiene and things like that as best we can. But it's definitely good to be back training, and I think due to start back the first weekend of August, so kind of counting down till then, really.
Yeah, and there's a slight tweaking of the format as well, because every team will play each other, then there'll be a split for what they call phase two, clubs being separated into two sections and playing each other again. What are your thoughts on that format?
It's not too bad, because you know, the thought of not having the season at all would have been, you know, very disappointing. So I think in whatever way they can, you know, create a safe and suitable format for the league, I'm kind of happy to participate in, really. We usually would have played everyone maybe three times, so this is just kind of cutting down nearly one full round of matches. But yeah, as I said, if it keeps the league going and it, you know, it gives us a good run out, I'm more than happy to try it out.
Two questions quickly for you. How's Graham getting on now that he's got his new coaching badge? And did your caricature look like you?
Firstly, Graham's getting on very well. Yeah, he's absolutely flying it, and we're all really enjoying training and everything like that. And the caricature, they did a good job.
Yeah, you'll have to tell us, those of us that are not in the know, what's this caricature lark all about?
Well, the team kindly got these kind of cartoon caricatures done up of me and one of my teammates, Janae, just who've been, you know, working the last few months. So it's kind of just in there. scrubs and then with the football in the background. But it was just a nice touch, kind of showing that everyone had it, you know, was supporting us throughout the last few difficult months, and a bit of fun as well.
Very good. Well, what about the season ahead for DLR Wales? Because obviously the big guns, the likes of Piemont and Wexford and Shells, they'll be eyeing the title. What are your aspirations when the league finally gets underway?
Well, firstly, definitely before the league breaks off into two phases, we're going to hope that we're in the top section of it. So that's definitely the goal, and just to do our very best from that and just try and get, you know, as much as we can out of every game. I think, you know, having had such a break, you know, people are really going to relish and, you know, not take for granted all these matches and, you know, really try and get the most out of them. So, definitely would be looking to get into the top four, so that top half of the league for the first phase.
And good too as well, Catherine, because the FAI gets a lot of flack, but it, you know, clubs are going to get some funding to ensure that all the grounds are up to health and safety and all the protocols that are involved, and some of the administration fees have been waived, which is very encouraging for clubs, because times are hard and clubs are, you know, have to try and scrape by and keep as much money in the club coffers as possible. But the fact that the FAI are waiving participation fees and are putting up a package for all of the clubs, for all nine in the Women's National League, that, you know, that's to be commended.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, you know, there would have been a bit of a scare as to whether the league was going to run or not, obviously depending on how, you know, COVID was going. And thankfully, you know, it's a safe level at the moment that we can even be thinking about playing in the league. So the fact that each team is getting that bit of support to ensure that everyone's able to participate is brilliant, and very grateful of that.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck, Catherine. Hopefully we'll chat to you again when the season is up and running. That's Catherine Cronin from DLR Wales and the Women's National League getting underway in August. James, before we go, anything strike you over the weekend in the world of football? John Egan's goal for Sheffield United was tasty, wasn't it?
Yeah, John Egan, in fairness, I think this is exactly what Stephen Kenny needs right now, is he needs a couple of goals going in and a couple of good performances. Do you know what? The only thing that's striking me at the minute is that I'm just really looking forward to the 31st of July. I just want this month now to fly along so we can get back and get out and watch some football again. I can't wait to see the fixture list when we get it, see who's playing who. Obviously, I think Neil might have seen it earlier. He mentioned that they might be their first game against Bowes, did he say, earlier on? I think I heard that slipped in.
Yeah,
that'd be an interesting game.
I think they were due to play Bowes before the season was deferred, so we'll have to wait and see. And again, we're all waiting for the fixture list with great anticipation. Will most matches be on Friday and Saturday nights, or will they do something like England, have maybe matches on Wednesdays and Thursdays? What's your gut instinct on that?
Gut instinct is that they'll run it on the Friday and Saturday nights. Midweek games have never been great here in Ireland, even when fans were allowed into the ground. I don't know, just something about midweek fans. Just the atmosphere just isn't there for a midweek game. I think under the lights on a Friday or Saturday night is the best way to do it, to create any form of atmosphere. Even, and as you said earlier, there may be a chance of some people going into the grounds. I did see a number of 250 people being let in initially, being muted around the place. So I think you have to go Friday and Saturday under the lights and just get it back and have a good crack at it.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, I'm of the view that it's baby steps to begin with, that they'll be reluctant to involve fans. They'll just want to get it up and running and gradually bring in fans, that it might be a bit of a risk to try and manage crowds with everything that's going on at the moment. Maybe I'm just being guarded on that. We'll have to wait and see. But
I don't think you are. I think at the end of the day, as Catherine just mentioned it there, frontline workers have gone through so much since the beginning of March. Well, late end of February to now. And the League of Ireland, as we've mentioned as well, like over the last couple of weeks, will it come back, won't it come back, brought a little bit of negative publicity on the league again. But if we go too quick and something happens and something escalates, it's an easy one to attack. The League of Ireland seems to be very easy to attack, and that'll just give people more ammunition to attack the League of Ireland if we go back too quick and ramp it up too quickly. And if something, God forbid, happened, it would come back double.
We'll see how it goes. Steady as she goes, perhaps, might be the way to go. Anyway, haven't asked you about the house, James.
The house is nearly there, Adrian. Yes. The house is nearly there. Hopefully on Wednesday, everything will be finished.
For the last couple of weeks, you've been saying the house is nearly there, but how nearly
is nearly there?
Okay.
Nearly, like hopefully on Wednesday, I'm able to cook something in the kitchen. That's how nearly we're there. Like,
brilliant. Okay.
Which we haven't been able to do since the 2nd of March.
Yeah. Okay, James, until the next time, until next week, take care, mind yourself. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Adrian. Bye-bye.